the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, simply the best Bitcoin podcast in Bedford, and now the number 53 ranked investing podcast in Slovakia. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today, to get you ready for your weekend, I have an interview with the man, the legend, Mr. Tone Vase. But first, I have a message from my show sponsors. If you are interested in a crypto-backed loan, well, BlockFi is the leading crypto to USD lender, servicing customers worldwide, including 47 US states, and their interest rates are now as low as 4.5%. BlockFi accepts Bitcoin, Ether, and Litecoin as collateral. Customers can be funded in USD or GUSD, which is Gemini's dollar-backed stablecoin, and you can go from application to funding in as little as 30 minutes. If you sign up at blockfi.com/whatbitcoindid, you can get $25 in free crypto added to customer collateral loans under $10,000, or $50 in free crypto added to customer collateral loans over $10,000, and applying takes less than 2 minutes. And what about my other lead sponsor, Paxful? Have you checked them out yet? Just give yourself a minute. Head over to their website and find out why they are a proper Bitcoin company, offering the most comprehensive options available for buying Bitcoin. They accept bank transfers, they accept debit and credit cards, PayPal, Western Union. We're talking about over 300 different payment options for buying Bitcoin, all listed on their website, so make sure you head over there and check it out. Also, they are a true peer-to-peer Bitcoin marketplace. They have a full-service escrow system, and they offer 24/7 customer support. These guys are absolutely awesome. Check them out at paxful.com, which is paxful.com. If you think you'd like to become an advertiser, well, I've just found out you can sponsor the chairs at Consensus for $130,000. Yes, you get your logo on a chair for the 8,800 attendees, but for the same money, you could sponsor my podcast for over a whole year and reach a growing audience of over 100,000 listeners every month with a tailored message. When people say Bitcoin, not blockchain, I say podcast, not chairs. So if you're interested in advertising, drop me an email on hello@whatbitcoindid.com and we can book a call to discuss. Okay, so on to my interview with Tone. Mr. Tone Vase. I've wanted to do this for ages, actually. Tone's definitely one of those people who stands out. I've been following him on Twitter for ages, following his videos, following his YouTube chats. He's a pretty cool guy. I like him. And recently, we started chatting. I decided I was going to head out to his Unconfiscatable conference. So we started chatting, asked him to come on the show. Yeah, and he was cool with it. He said he'll come on, no problem at all. With all those countless other crypto traders telling you to buy this coin, that coin, that token, every other shitcoin, Tone is a maximalist trader. He only trades Bitcoin in this world of crypto, and on this show we discuss why he doesn't think altcoins are any form of long-term viable investment. But we also talk about his conference, why he's putting on, why he got involved in it, what is different about it, the stresses of organizing a conference, which is pretty cool. And yeah, it's just a solid interview. Tone's a great guy. I hope you enjoy it. You know, if you have any questions, you can reach out to me. So do you like my show? Do you support it? Have you ever left me a review? Have you ever shared the show out on social media? If you haven't, you want to support the show, if you want to help me with my goal of buying Bedford Town Football Club, head over to www.whatbitcoindid.com, click on the support section, and you can find out all the ways you can help support the show. And I do want to thank my first patron, top tier sponsor, Elite Crypto Consulting, your personalized training teacher. Thank you guys. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Okay, let's move on to the interview. As I said, if you have any questions, you can reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. Hi, Tone. How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, thanks for coming on. It's been a long time coming. I've had you as a target for quite a while, but I haven't been able to find you or get that way of reaching out to you. And then over the last few weeks, we started talking and here we are. So thanks for coming on. And also, you gave a mention to my show in your show the other day, which was pretty cool. So thank you.
Yeah, no, I've been hearing a lot of good things. What Bitcoin Did, slowly becoming one of the more popular audio podcasts. It's great. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yeah, a lot of hard work. So yeah, but how have you been? Are you all right? I like the new look.
Yeah, everyone seems to really like the new look. I'm digging it as well. So doing good. Back to traveling. Took about 2.5 weeks off. Relatively speaking, took 2.5 weeks off from traveling. Can't remember the last time I didn't do some kind of a video or an interview. So other than that, Bitcoin doesn't sleep. So neither do we.
All right, man. Well, listen, look, we've got a lot to cover. And look, do you know what? Funny enough, Tone, I seem to know a lot about you, yet know nothing about you. So I kind of know everything about you in the Bitcoin world, but I don't know anything else about you. I don't even know where your accent's from. So give me the background, man, but not like something you might have told everyone. Just tell me where you're from, what your like childhood was like, you know, what made you such a Bitcoin maximalist.
Oh man, yeah, that's actually kind of a good thing that a lot of people don't know a lot of the details. I was born in Soviet Russia, and my family immigrated over to the U.S. when I was about 10 years old. Grew up in Brooklyn, hence all of these weird accents, half Russian, half Brooklyn, and went to American universities and ended up working on Wall Street eventually. And now here we are. Trading was always a passion of mine, even though that wasn't what I did. On Wall Street. On Wall Street, I was part of a team that was building risk models. And I worked at several companies, but in a similar style. And yeah, eventually got into the whole libertarian aspect of things, the Austrian economics aspect of things, led me to Bitcoin, heard about it from Max Keiser on RT. And that led me into Bitcoin. I started to understand it more and more. Had about, I don't know, I think my love of altcoins lasted maybe about 3 months. And then I realized how silly they are, maybe as long as 6 months. And this was back in like 2014 days, back when altcoins were becoming popular the first time. I realized how stupid that was. And I've been trying to explain that to people ever since as my main goal, to try and make this space more legitimate, make this space more stable going into the future. Because to be honest with you, I'm sure we might get into it a little later. If we really want this, like the crypto space, to compete on a global scale with the dollar, with the euro, with gold, well, you can't have, you know, like the crazy Doge people or the Ripple people. That's just insanity.
So do you feel like an American or a Russian or like a hybrid of the two?
I'm really stuck in the middle here. Complete hybrid of the two. And also, like, politically, I'm completely in, like, I have my own ways of doing pretty much everything. I'm over my life. And I was a decent athlete as well, played on some teams, even like, right before I got into Bitcoin and it kind of took over my life, I was still playing competitive volleyball on some like Division A club teams. And like with a lot of things, I'm not a very good follower, but I wouldn't call myself a great leader either, because I like to do my own thing and I don't like people blindly following me either, right? Like, I always want people to make their own decisions. That's why I was also not a great high school teacher, because I'm not going to babysit you and baby you. It makes it, teaching trading is a lot better for me, because I teach you how to do it right, but then it's not my problem whether you do it right or not. You're on your own. It's another reason why I don't like subscription services. I don't like to hold people's hand. So even with like diet and exercise, I don't like to follow. I like to read a bunch of stuff. I like to look at what the experts are doing. But I also know that nothing works for everyone, and you have to make it your own. Everything has to be unique to you. And I've kind of lived that way without even realizing it, that anytime I try to follow something or someone, it just doesn't work. But if you're smart, if you continue learning, you'll find something that works for you. That's what I currently do with my diet. That's what I somewhat do with my exercise. I found things that work for me, and it's great. And it's the kind of the same philosophy I bring to my audience as well. Try to find something that works for you, but I'll help you understand my side of it.
All right. So tell me, have you got any friends back in Russia who know if they're buying Bitcoin? And because we've heard the Russians are buying the Bitcoin.
I really don't know. I try to stay away from insider information. For a couple of reasons. One is, I don't know if it's accurate or not. I don't know if it's trusted or not. And I don't trade on insider information for two reasons. One, it depends on the insider information. Some of it could be illegal and it's just not worth it. But in crypto space, there is no such thing as insider information being illegal. So you can trade on it, but I don't really have time to vet it. I don't have time to trade on it. So I try not to pay attention too much to insider information, and I view it as noise. I try to analyze the public information and identify what it means for the intermediate and long-term future.
All right, cool. Well, listen, look, there's a bunch of stuff I want to get into. I do want to talk about your conference. I'm coming out to it. Looking very much forward to that. I do want to talk about the market and trading and Bitcoin, but let's start with shitcoins and altcoins because, you know, you're a big voice. I guess myself, I feel like I'm becoming more of a voice because when I started this podcast, Tone, I was trading everything, right? And I'm now at a position where, and you'll laugh because it kind of matches one of your tweets, I only hold Bitcoin and I've still got some Monero, right? But like, and I hold a certain amount of interest in Ethereum, which I'll explain in a minute, but it's very small and very limited. But you're like, everything outside of Bitcoin is a shitcoin. But is everything outside of Bitcoin a scam?
No, absolutely not. It's not necessarily a scam. Also, we have to define the word scam, right? Is it something that the creator of the idea or the project knows that it's a scam? Or is it something like we know it's a scam and we're trying to explain to the creator how he's running a Ponzi, but the creator just doesn't see it, right? So there are things like that. I mean, you'd be surprised. It usually happens when you talk to like children and you talk to, I'm sure you have like nieces and nephews where like, they're like, hey, I'm going to do this. I have a really great way to print money in my printer. I just learned Photoshop. When you're talking, let's say if you have like an 8 or a 9 year old, right? And parents are giving them paper money and they go to like a store. It doesn't happen as often these days, and they go to the store and spend that money. So for example, if you have like a 7 or an 8 year old child, or you have a niece or a nephew, I don't know if you do or not, doesn't matter.
Tony, I've got two kids. I've got a 14-year-old and an 8-year-old.
An 8-year-old, right. So imagine this situation, right? Can you picture your 8-year-old? I'm sure your 8-year-old's smart. So maybe about 2 years ago when your 8-year-old was 6, and your 8-year-old's like, Dad, I learned Photoshop. I'm excellent. Look what I've done. And he showed you on a piece of paper that he printed out British pounds. I'm assuming you're in the UK, right? And then he's like, I'm going to go and spend these, and I'm going to buy whatever I want. Imagine the conversation you have to have with that 6-year-old. It's not actually the same money. And even if you can buy something with it, you're scamming the other person because you just printed your own money. And he's going to look at you like, well, I don't understand. I'm giving him a piece of paper and he's giving me something. Right? So this is the kind of thing you might have to explain to someone that comes into the space. And a lot of these people that are starting these ICO projects, some of them barely graduated high school. Assuming they've graduated high school, they think they know everything there is to know about securities, and they think Wall Street's a scam. And they're like, well, how come this company gets to do whatever they like on Wall Street, but I can't, you know, sell this digital asset, right? And it's hard to explain to these people because I think some of them genuinely don't understand that what they're doing is scammy. So outside of like those minor differences, there are some projects that aren't exactly scams. Like I wouldn't exactly call Litecoin a scam. I wouldn't even call Monero a scam because I remember when these things were like up and coming. I wasn't around in 2011 when Litecoin launched. I think Monero launched in early 2013 or 2012. And so for them, there's no scamminess to it. But they don't have to be scammy for me to ignore them. I always compare these things to penny stocks. You know, there are hundreds of Google competitors, and they're worth about 5 cents a share. And I'm just not interested in those companies because I know they're not going to take over Google. And I don't care if there are people trading these 5-cent stocks that are claiming to be Google competitors to make more dollars. That's great. My problem is when that person that's holding a 5-cent Google price stock Google competitor and is all over social media trying to convince the uneducated public that this is going to be the Google killer and they need to invest in it. That's where I start to draw the line. So while not every single altcoin or ICO is a scam, I just don't see any of them as a long-term viable investment. And that's a lot of things people don't either want to understand about me or just don't understand about me. There is about 5 to 10% of the crypto space that's not a scam. But I would not invest in it. If I had the time to trade it, would I trade Monero or Ethereum or Litecoin? Probably not, for other reasons, because I like my regulated markets. I like knowing that I can have all the money I want sitting in a brokerage account and it's not at risk of getting hacked. I like knowing that there is regulation that isn't going to treat my Apple stock as a pump and dump. And I like the fact that Apple stock has a market cap that prevents it from being a pump and dump, right? So I like to trade things that are more regulated and with more liquidity. Trading illiquid assets is not my specialty.
Okay, but you trade Bitcoin, right? And trading Litecoin is, you know, Monero has a similar kind of risk to Bitcoin. They're similar exchanges, right?
So, well, sure. But there's a couple of differences there. It's time. The biggest constraint is time. And the only reason I even trade Bitcoin a little bit today is because I look at the price of Bitcoin every day. I can go a week or 2 weeks without looking at the price of Litecoin. So if I am to start trading Litecoin, I would need to start looking at the price of Litecoin, and not only every day, but even intraday. So, and I just don't have that kind of time, which is another reason why I'm currently almost not trading anything. Normally I would trade traditional markets as well during earnings season, which is one of my specialties. And I tend to get busy during that time sometimes, and I end up missing an entire earnings season, and now I gotta wait 3 more months to attempt to do another trade.
All right, and also you said that you like your regulated market. So did you quite like the work by the Winklevoss this week, the crypto knees rules? What did you make of that?
So that's a very general, broad statement. And I don't understand what that means. Crypto needs rules. It's like saying humans need rules, right? But what does that mean? No one is going to rule what you can and can't do, like say in the privacy of your own home. They can kind of try, but it's not enforceable, right? So there are some things that Bitcoin needs rules for, but not Bitcoin itself. There are some things that you do with Bitcoin that requires rules. Trading is one of them. Look, I'm sorry that, but if you are running an exchange, that exchange needs to be regulated. I want to make sure that the people running that exchange are not going to run away with my money that is sitting at the exchange. I want to make sure that they are running an honest order book. I want to make sure that they're not giving preferential treatment to certain traders over others. And I want to make sure that everything there is legitimate so that I am trading on an even playing field with other traders. It's no different than when you go to a casino, you anticipate there to be some kind of regulation that the games that you play at a casino are not rigged, so that to guarantee that you are going to lose. So so I'm all for that type of regulation. On the other hand, I'm very against KYC AML regulation. I think that a person should be able to put their money wherever they like, but the person that is soliciting that money from them needs to be even significantly more regulated than they are today.
All right, man. And I got over the altcoin addiction. It took me a bit longer. You know, it's like it's a combination between an addiction and gambling. But like most addictions, it doesn't go until you let it go, right? So I kind of got to the point where I was doing more and more interviews, learning more about Bitcoin, and just realizing there was little long-term value in these things. But it was only at the point like I sold the lot and said, I'm done. I kind of let it go. Then I had the clarity. Do you feel like that's a big problem for a lot of people? They just can't let go of these altcoins.
You know what it is? I don't think it took you longer. How long did it take you after you decided to start your podcast and becoming a public personality that people started listening to?
Do you know what? I reckon...
Because I have a feeling the main difference between you and I is that I became a public personality sooner after I got into the crypto space.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even like that kind of public personality thing. It makes me feel a little bit awkward because none of this was by design. It's just, it has happened. But yeah, I guess I started to feel more responsible for the things I say. I put out a tweet once saying, I think...
Exactly. That's the difference.
Yeah. So what happened was, I can't remember the exact time. Maybe it was like 4 or 5 months ago. Somebody liked a tweet and I saw it and I was like, God, did I say that? Because I don't believe that anymore. So what happened was I deleted all my tweets. I got rid of the whole history because I tried to edit them and it just takes so long when you've sent thousands. So I just got rid of the fucking lot and said, I'm done. And then I kind of started to feel a bit more responsible for what I was saying. Like, you know, do I actually believe this? And then what's happened is like, there's no specific one point, but over time I've gradually felt the gravity of Bitcoin and gradually started surrounding myself with people who I trust the opinion of. And then, like I say, the final straw was kind of just selling them all off because I'm like, I knew what I believed before I sold them off, but I kind of was holding on to them thinking, oh, you know, maybe they'll go up. And in the end, I was like, this is dumb. So Tony, yeah, I just sold the lot and let it go. But I feel like a lot of people just can't let them go.
Yeah, no, a lot of it had to do with personality, right? Like once people started paying attention more to you and you start interacting with some of these people and you realize what happens. And this is where people like me have to be extra careful because the one thing everyone keeps asking is the price of Bitcoin. Where is the price of Bitcoin going, right? And I have to answer that very, very responsibly. And the one thing that I will not do is have people hold any kind of a coin. Like, because I know how much backlash I get just from simply trying to predict the price of Bitcoin that I find investment grade that I expect to go up over time. So I can only imagine almost everybody else that at one point or another were recommending an Ethereum and a Litecoin and Monero or something that no longer exists. And these people literally have to leave the space. So many YouTubers have disappeared, you know, maybe they'll be back if the altcoins come back. But if the altcoins don't come back, they're probably not going to reappear, right? And I didn't want to take that chance. I did not ever want to go back and delete my Twitter history. I didn't want to have to go edit anything. Everything I've ever done, I think there's only been like one or two videos that I've taken down. And probably one of them was immediately after I live streamed the video because it was just inappropriate. So I took that down. Not going to talk about what it is. And someone else was like live recording it while I was doing it. And the video still ended up somewhere else on the internet. But again, I'm not going to talk about what it is. And I think another one or two I took down because of some, I interviewed some people and like their legal team didn't like one or two things. But being busy and lazy, I didn't want to edit. So I just, you know what, I'll just take it down. Other than that, I try not to do that. So I have to think way into the future. I have to think multiple years into the future, if not a decade, because I want what I say to permanently be there on the internet and not have to regret it. And when you realize that if you are intending to be around for the next 5 or 10 years, you really have to think about what you're going to say, and they have to last long term. And I think more people, once they get into this public space, they either realize how wrong they are and they disappear, or they wise up and they turn Bitcoin maximalists.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that as well. I think it was maybe Dan Held who said it to me. He was like, listen, in 4, 5, 6 years, like when all this junk's gone away and there's only Bitcoin left, the work you've done over those 5 or 6 years is going to become really important, and it's going to help you in your future career by having the right opinion now. Because there is a load of podcasters out there right at the moment, and that kind of really stuck with me.
Yeah, no, that's great. I met Dan Held long ago, just as he designed the app, one of the first Bitcoin apps to track the price of Bitcoin. I think it got bought by somebody. I already forgot. But yeah, Dan did good work back then.
I also think something else that's missing. It's not happened yet. Well, I think maybe it's happened like once. A stable coin did it recently. But like nobody's come out and said, yeah, do you know what? I was wrong. Like, could you imagine like a Charlie Lee coming out saying, do you know what? I was wrong.
That's the one I'm waiting for. I'm waiting. Charlie had a chance, right? And he seems to be doubling down. Charlie was the one that could have said he said, and I always give Charlie a pass. Like Charlie is the one that one day, I think he missed it. I think he had his chance probably like last year where he said, hey guys, I'm realizing that Litecoin will not have a viable future. There's really no need for Litecoin to exist. Back when I invented it, we all thought differently. I would have given him a pass. Even I thought Litecoin had a viable future back then, back in 2013, 2014. But eventually it doesn't, right? Like, how long do you hold on to these things? And you're right. No one has. Almost no one has come out and said that they made a mistake and they were wrong.
Yeah. I think the thing with Charlie is that one of the most difficult things is if he did come out and say that, there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are going to say, well, you created this and then you promoted it and then you sold the top and you've made all your money and now you're actually killing it by saying it's got no future. So he has a whole bunch of like profile and credibility risk by doing that. But I would just love someone to do it.
I have one example, actually. I don't know if you watched my interview with Ronnie Moes.
No.
So so Ronnie came into the space as a Wall Street analyst predicting stocks. Came and learned about Bitcoin in June of 2017. By July and August of 2017, he's putting out reports on crypto coins, which is way too early. And immediately, one of these shitcoins contacted him, called Dig, wanted him to write, a full report for their internal use, which he did. He then sat on this report for a while as the price of that Dig coin went up, and they paid him in some Dig coin. And then he started promoting Dig because he actually thought it was a viable coin. And then it went up for a little bit. It pumped all the way to 28 cents. And it's currently at a half a cent, and he has a lot of paid subscribers. So you can imagine the backlash when you recommend a token trading at 20 plus cents, it pumps to 28, but then falls to sub penny, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about a 99.5% drop. So gigantic. And now he's on this crusade to expose Dig as a scam. Which I kind of told him back in 2017 that it was, without even looking at it, because I've seen enough of these things and I knew how this would end. And this is the unfortunate part. He's now dealing with two problems. One, Dig is actually suing him that they're not a scam. I don't know how they're going to pull that off. A lot of his subscribers are very mad at him and potentially trying to sue him for recommending this thing that fell 99% in value. And all of the people that are still holding on to Dig that believe that it is a very good token are mad at him for trying to take down Dig by going to the FBI and other sources. So admitting that you're wrong is not necessarily ideal for your health and financial career either, right? Like there is no good thing. I mean, the smartest thing to do is to just be smart before you say something publicly.
Okay, before we move on to your conference, I do want to talk about two people with you, and you've probably got quite different opinions on both of them. But first, I want to talk to you about Roger. I went out earlier in the year and interviewed Roger, and I will interview him again. I got a lot of crap for it, and I know you've had your run-ins with him. But you did tell me about this tweet where you did the 10 most influencers in 2018, and you've got Roger in the list. And I can't understand if it was a joke or serious.
No, it was serious, and it was my, because we all saw that CoinDesk list of most influential of 2018, and it was just ridiculous, right? So I decided to look ahead, and I wanted to pick out who do I expect to be most influential in 2019 for next year. And I mean, look, I have a huge bias towards Bitcoin, and I do believe that Bitcoin will start to separate away from altcoins in 2019. But what if I'm off by a year? What if I'm off by 2 years? I'm always my trend ideas. I mean, I'm very early. My first trading portfolio, when I was a trader for the first time, I started trading in 2005, and in mid 2006, I think, or early 2006, I realized that there was a housing bubble, and I started shorting real estate and home builders, and I ended up running out of money and blowing up the portfolio in early 2007. And I said, well, now I have to go get a job, and that job was at Bear Stearns that, 9 months later went down because of the housing bubble, right? So irony really has no bounds. So, look, I wanted to pick the most influential person in the world of altcoins because he is pretty influential. I don't have to agree with him, but he still owns Bitcoin.com. We also spec he owns the Bitcoin Twitter handle. He still has a lot of money sponsoring a lot of conferences, and he's pretty influential. I'm starting to slowly step away from the altcoin ICO conference scene. They are starting to die down. And, you know, I liked going there because I felt like someone had to stand on stage and talk about how bad that stuff is. And if a conference sponsored by a bunch of ICOs and scams is going to put me on stage without the ability to censor what I have to say, and because I don't take any money from them, they can't exactly tell me what to say or what not to say. Once they invite me on stage, I'm free to say whatever. So I felt that it was, you know, at least one Bitcoin maximalist's duty to go to these events and try to educate people not to invest in any of the sponsors that are all over the venue. But those are starting to cut back. And I think Roger is still at the forefront of that. So the only reason why he's there is because I think that he is the most influential person in the crypto space that's not a Bitcoiner. But because Bitcoin will ultimately prevail over all the others, everybody besides Roger was on the side of Bitcoin, other than I think I had like the SEC and one of the and Bakkt that's going to come out. I don't think Bakkt is going to be that big a deal, the exchange out of New York, but I think they're relevant, and I think the hype around them is very relevant, so I think they are an influencer in the space.
See, based on history of, and I looked at one of your tweets where you listed all previous coins and scams, and like, they all die in the end, right? So based on history, there's a very good chance at some point in the next 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 years, Bitcoin Cash will fundamentally die. Like, there will be no usage, the mining will die off, it maybe will get attacked, who knows? But at some point, there's a good chance that it will die. And what would be interesting, or I'm intrigued to see, is what Roger's response will be at that point. Will it be, will he keep fighting? Will he, like, will he go down with a ship? Or will he turn around at one point and say, like we talked about Charlie, and say, look, I got this wrong. I'm really intrigued to see how that plays out.
I think he will. I think Roger is too much into the space. But again, the longer the time goes, the harder it is. The longer you don't admit the mistake, the harder it's going to be. We know this with our lives as well, right? The longer you defend the wrong position, the harder it is for you to admit you've made a mistake. The sooner you do it, the better. I think Roger will eventually do it. And here's why. Because when I had my debate with Roger, he pretty much admitted that he's not committed to Bitcoin Cash. He's willing to switch to a better alternative. The problem is, I don't think there will be a better alternative, right? So right now he likes Dash. He may or may not like Monero, but I know he's a big fan of Dash. Maybe there'll be another altcoin, but Bitcoin Cash is one of the best alternatives to Bitcoin because it still has, you know, Bitcoin's fundamentals. It has Bitcoin's initial layer, which is more stable than most of the other shitcoins, altcoins. So Bitcoin Cash is a top 10 coin. It's legitimately in the top 10. Certainly Ripple isn't. And so he's already on one of the best alternatives. And when that alternative fails, I just don't see another alternative for him to cling to. And the only option he will have is to come back to Bitcoin if he still believes in censorship-resistant, unconfiscatable, government, uncontrollable value transfer. And what I threw out there, I've been meaning to tweet this out. I saw a bunch of polls where people are like, will you welcome Roger back to Bitcoin? Well, the beauty is
you don't have to.
Bitcoin doesn't have to. You're free to come in and out of Bitcoin as you like, but obviously the question was geared towards the people that remained loyal to Bitcoin, which is the majority of the people. Would the people welcome Roger back to Bitcoin? And the majority of these polls always say no. It comes in like, you know, 75, 80%. No, we would not welcome Roger back to Bitcoin. I always wanted to tweet out my poll where I would add a little disclaimer. would you welcome Roger back to Bitcoin if he donates Bitcoin.com and the Bitcoin Twitter handle to the Bitcoin community in some way or form?
Next up, I talk to Tom more about Bitcoin and what it takes to become a trader. But before that, I have a message from my show sponsors. So, you all know BlockFi, right? But have you checked them out? Have you followed them on Twitter? Have you signed up to their newsletter? If you are not following them, then you are missing out on the future of cryptocurrencies and banking. Also, they've extended their sponsorship of the podcast, which is amazing. So much has happened in the 4 months since they started advertising. We had Zach Prince on the show, the CEO. That was episode 51. You should definitely check that out. He talks about reshaping the future of banking with crypto. They raised another $4 million in funding, which they're going to use to expand their team. They're launching exciting new products. They've got a crypto savings account coming that earns interest and crypto-backed credit cards. They added support for Litecoin as collateral and stablecoins as a funding option and so much more. If you are interested in a crypto-backed loan, well, BlockFi is the leading crypto to USD lender, servicing customers worldwide, including 47 US states, and their interest rates start as low as 4.5%. If you sign up at blockfi.com/whatbitcoindid, you can get $25 in free crypto added to customer collateral loans under $10,000 or $50 of free crypto added to customer collateral loans over $10,000. And applying takes less than 2 minutes. Next up, I want to tell you about my buddies over at Honeyminer, one of the very first advertisers I had on the podcast, and they've come back with a huge announcement. They're now supporting Linux. So, if you have ever wanted to get into crypto mining, but you've got no idea, well, Honeyminer is the easiest way to get started with their one-click install, earning Bitcoin straight to your computer. They support Windows and Linux, with Mac coming soon. But let's talk about Linux, because this is their new announcement that they've just come to market with. Compatible with Ubuntu 16.04, Ubuntu 18.04, and CentOS 7. Honeyminer Max pays out market value plus 10%. As with all mining, payouts may fluctuate with each payout period of 2 hours, but should average out at 10% greater than open market earnings. Does that sound cool? Are you interested? Well, if you want to start mining with Honeyminer, head over to honeyminer.com/labs. That is Honeyminer, HoneyminerLabs. Yeah, I would hope he would do it anyway. Like, he would realize that's the right thing to do. And I don't know. Like, I saw those polls and I kind of thought, it doesn't matter. He can come back if he wants. That's the beauty of it. And I think there's a lot of people who just, you know, fundamentally can't stand the guy anymore. You know, I've met him and I've had conversations that are non-Bitcoin with him. We've discussed a lot of things to do with, say, with Ross Ulbricht. And there's a lot I like about him. And I find him off camera very different from the guy you see on camera. The other person I wanted to talk to you about, I've noticed you tweet about a lot, and is someone I've come to really appreciate a lot over the last 6 months, is Luke Dash Jr. You're a big fan, right?
I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Luke Dash Jr. because he is one of the smartest guys, like in the world, but certainly in Bitcoin or in crypto space. He really is one of the smart guys in the crypto space. And when you talk to him, you realize that, like, he thinks at a different level. Like, it's sometimes it's hard to talk to him because his brain processes information differently. Even when other developers, like, I heard stories from other developers, like sitting with Adam Back and listening to Adam Back talk about Luke Dash Jr. There's just things that Luke Dash Jr., in a room full of smart developers, there are things that Luke Dash Jr. assumes is common sense, and other people are like, no, Luke, can you please explain? Like, he really is one of those people that can look at something and it's totally obvious to him that other people completely miss. Other very, very smart people. Luke Dash Jr. was the guy that, to him, it was very simple to convert SegWit into a soft fork versus a hard fork, when even, like, the smartest people that came up with SegWit didn't see a path for that. And Luke Dash is like, oh, this is not hard. This is simple. Here you go. And this understanding Luke Dash Jr. is, or that whole dynamic between developers and innovation in general, is that it's not always the smartest person in the room that has that little breakthrough that's going to be able to take that breakthrough further. And this is the problem that I have with people that are, you know, godifying Satoshi. Satoshi created proof of work. He solved the double spend problem. it doesn't mean that Satoshi is the right person to solve every single computer problem known to man going forward. And guys like Luke Dash and guys like Greg Maxwell and guys like Peter Willa, and they're probably much better suited to make that code more stable and more efficient. And that's where we've been going. And Luke Dash is one of those people. He's probably one of the top 10 brightest minds programming on Bitcoin, probably even in the top five. And his opinion matters. His opinion could be out there sometimes. He wants to create a lower, he wants to make the block significantly smaller in size. He wanted to do that proof of work change to destroy Bitmain. But thank God we didn't do that because Bitmain seems to have destroyed themselves just fine, which is what we were trying to explain to Luke, because he saw it more as a black and white. And some people are very good at some things, not necessarily ideal for others. And this is where, you know, you got to take multiple opinions in line. I was with Luke on the user-activated soft fork and not with Greg Maxwell, who didn't really like the idea of a user-activated soft fork because he saw it as a little bit dangerous. I sided with Luke on that one. Meanwhile, in the small block debate, or the normal block versus smaller block, and we need to do a proof of work change to get rid of Bitmain, I didn't side with Luke. I sided with, you know, the other core developers. So you just got to think it through, but you have to make your decisions based on the smart people in the right room, not based on some crazy people you never heard of that don't even, that aren't even in that room. And that's how altcoins come about. Most altcoins come about because someone proposes an idea to the Bitcoin core developers. They glance at that idea and they go, no, this is crazy. This is not going to work. It has all these problems. And the person says, well, I'll prove you wrong. I'm going to go ahead and do it on my own. This is how we get Zcash. This is how we get, you know, Bcash. This is how we get a lot of these coins. It's how we get Decred. This is how we get a lot of the old coins where a developer just doesn't want to work within the consensus rules, doesn't want to listen to his peers, and they want to go off on their own and create a failed project. That's fine. And then it's just hard for that person to make a mistake, and you lose a somewhat competent person that could have helped going forward, but instead decided to go off on his own. And this is, I sent out one of these tweets as well where I said, hey, Luke Dash Jr. has some of these crazy ideas, but here's what he's not going to do. He's not going to take those ideas and create an altcoin with it. He's going to just, you know, work within the rules and fight for them or help in other ways.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, look, that was my intro and we've done 40 minutes. I knew this would happen. Okay, listen, I want to talk to you about your conference. And
sure.
For a couple of reasons. Like, I'm coming. I can't wait. And I think the lineup is pretty epic. I'm hoping to get a few interviews out there. I'm looking forward to the poker. I'm just looking forward to all of it. So I got a few questions about it. And especially as you're probably somebody who's probably been to the most conferences. Like, you might have been to more conferences than anyone else, potentially. You're definitely going to be up there. So tell me why you decided you want to do your own conference and give yourself your own stress with that.
Yeah, clearly I don't have enough to do. And clearly I don't have enough stress. I just wanted people that I like and respect to get together in one room. And I just wanted a little bit more control over that room. I wanted to make the speaker lineup. That's what I wanted, to have a final say on the speakers. And I wanted to put the right people on stage. And I want this documented. I want this documented for the future. And every single one of the speakers has been hand-selected by me. There was probably another 20 people I would have loved to speak at that conference, but it's the first one. And in the future, I'm hoping I can do this as an annual thing and make it fun, make it interesting. We have a couple of Bitcoin similar conferences to this one. The Honey Badger conference in Riga is very good. The Hackers Congress in Prague is not exactly a Bitcoin conference, a little more general, but that's a good conference. We used to have the Scaling Bitcoin conference that kind of fragmented, and that one was a little more technical. And now we have the breaking and building on Bitcoin conferences, which are also Bitcoin related. There is a conference out in Texas now called BitBlock Boom that is very similar to what I'm doing. Because these altcoin fests, it was just too many of them. And I want to focus a little more on the Bitcoin side. And in the future, we're hoping that some government officials will come to understand it. I'm not expecting Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ecosystem to necessarily cooperate with government, but I am expecting government to properly understand it. Now, like, my hope for the people of the crypto space is the same for all people, to properly understand Bitcoin. And I just wanted to put the right people on stage to do that, to understand Bitcoin. The poker tournament is just more for fun. All my years in Bitcoin, I see all of these Bitcoin people that claim they're great poker players. Well, you know what? Let's find out. Let's find out who's really good. And we got the tournament going. It's 100 people, 0.1 Bitcoin buy-in, professionally organized, professional dealers, tables, the works. And it's going to only take about 4 hours. We'll narrow down the 100 people to the last one standing at the final table.
Well, is it going to be one winner, or are you going to have a final table winners?
Well, the final table will split the winnings in a scalable way, right? So I'm trying to make sure that the 10th person gets their money back at 0.1, and then you scale it up to the front person. So yeah, it is going to go down to the wire to the last person. And it'll be fun. Doug Polk's going to play. We have at least one fully professional player. I think there's a couple of more that snuck in there that don't really want to be public about it.
Well, listen, look, if I come up against Doug Polk, I've already decided I'm going to play each hand against him blind, because I don't want to try and outthink him. So I think my best chance is just to make it like a gamble against him. So, okay, so...
I can't wait to sit at... I mean, I think the only way me and Doug Polk are going to be at the same table is if we both make the final table. Because I'm trying to spread this... And it's not even because I want to avoid him. It's because I want to spread the celebrities around so that the people that are paying to play in the game also have fun sitting with people that they recognize. So that's the main purpose of it. But I would love to play against them. Hopefully I'll make the final table with
them. Yeah, I hope I will. I used to play a lot of poker when I was younger online, but I haven't played for a while. But you don't forget the rules. So I'm looking forward to it. Okay, look, back to the conference. So tell me, are you just doing this yourself, or have you got like an experienced conference organizer helping you? Or are you just like figuring this out?
Oh, God, no. We're figuring it out. So it's basically a team of four people. It's myself. It's my web developer that designed the website. My graphic designer that designed all of the logos and all of my thumbnails. He's helping out with registrations, but he's on the other side of the world. And most of the work is done by my manager, the guy that helps me, manages my email. And he's a great guy. And I try not to be public, so I try not to like say his name. He's not public in the space, and understands Bitcoin really well. And he organizes my venues as I travel around the world, helps me with my schedule, my speaker schedule. You know, tells me to go F myself when I, you know, say or do something stupid, and is a lot of help. And he's the one that's working with the venue, working with you know, the food catering, organizing everything, getting the insurance, getting the professional dealers, working, basically like organizing the whole thing on the ground. And we'll have a few volunteers helping us at the venue itself. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to keep it small. The maximum ticket sales I was going to sell was going to be, I was going to sell 300 tickets because the room only fits 400 people. So figure speakers, you know, press like yourself, and some of the others. We sold about 150 tickets so far. We're probably going to have about 50 people on press passes or something like that, and some close friends of ours, and the rest is speakers, and it's great. And it's going to be nice and small, hopefully manageable, and we'll see how we scale. We're trying to put together a live stream. We have a couple of product sponsors. A shout out to Cold Card, Open Dime, Hodl Hats. I bought a bunch of Saifa Dean's books, The Bitcoin Standard, gonna give those away. Huge shout out to the VIPs that bought, that paid a little extra. We're gonna give you nice gift bags with the stuff I just mentioned. And yeah, lots of people send in their design t-shirts and stuff like that. So it really is a grassroots movement, and we'll see what happens going into next year.
I think it looks great. I'll give it a massive shout out. I'll push it at the start of this show when it goes out, and I'll probably even push it out on Tuesday's show when that goes out, because I think it looks like a very cool and different conference. Yeah, and obviously I appreciate the fact that you've given me a pass to come, because I think it looks cool. I just think it looks like a really cool event. I was going to ask you one thing, and I know you've got something to add, but how long has this been in the planning, and during it, like, what have you learned that you didn't expect? Like, what's been the things you're like, oh shit, I never even thought about that?
Okay, so I kind of wanted to do it probably a year before, maybe a year earlier I wanted to do it, right? Like, when Bitcoin was reaching the high prices, we all want to, I can easily afford this even if it flops, right? So I wanted to do it a year earlier. So a couple of things. It took a lot longer to launch the website than expected, which makes sense. The other thing I learned is it's really hard. I don't know how they do. It's really hard to get good speakers, because everyone harasses good speakers. And it's amazing. It's like the other day on my channel, I debated the book, The Bitcoin Standard, with a couple of people. And everyone in the comments is like, well, why didn't you just get Saifedean? It's like, and my answer to them was, why don't I just get Donald Trump on my YouTube channel to talk about the economy? People think it's so easy. People think it's so easy to get whoever you like at a time that you like, and they will just cater to you, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I know that, right? Like, listen, Tone, like, I'm doing a twice weekly show, right? And I've managed to maintain a very high standard of guests. But you've got to constantly maintain that. And, like, for every... Well, especially when I first started, like the first few months, like every 10 to 15 people I asked, I got one yes. I'm now getting to the point where most people say yes, and they'll give me a time in the future. Like, but it's hard. It's a hustle.
Right. So, I mean, I knew that was going to be a little, I thought I can have an easier time getting developers. And this transitions really well to what I was going to say. So the main focus of my conference, I wanted to make it more developer focused, and I wanted to make it less technical development but more layman's development. Hey, I want to get like maybe two full panels of Bitcoin developers, like a Luke Dash Jr. and a Gregory Maxwell and a couple of people from Blockstream, because Maxwell isn't there anymore, and get some Lightning people on there to talk about what's going on. And I couldn't get the developers. So now it became a little more financially focused than the developer focused. So now we're working on another one. What my original vision was, already have bought the domain the other day, talking to Adam Back and Giacomo Zucco. Now, I'm not going to give too many details, and it's going to come out sooner than later. But we're trying to do something in Europe. And now if I can get Adam Back and some of the other people involved in the conference, then we can do it. And that's going to be a little more explaining Bitcoin development and the technology of Bitcoin to the non-developer. So like a cross between scaling Bitcoin and the Honey Badger conference, or a cross between scaling Bitcoin and my conference, where we explain this kind of stuff to the layman's person. And that's what I want. I want people to understand Bitcoin and cut out all of this altcoin nonsense. And and I also know that me traveling around the world eventually is going to come to an end. So I'm putting in the seeds now so that people can come to see me two, three times a year in mass, as opposed to me going around 30 times a year to see them.
All right, man. Well, listen, look, I want to talk a bit about the market as well on trading, because that's your gig. That's been your gig for a long time. That's where I first came aware of you. I've retired as a trader because I realized I'm terrible at it and I'm better at making podcasts. But I've been aware of your stuff, and you do the courses. So based on your experience, you've been in Bitcoin a while, but you've traded before. Like, what's going on at the moment? What do you make of the market? I don't want any price predictions, but what do you generally make of the market?
I still think the market is overall in a bearish posture. So I continue to expect lower prices sometime this year. It's really hard to predict when the lower prices are going to come. And I've been trying to anticipate a bump in the prices before going lower. But the price action over the last few days here in early to mid-January is already pushing prices lower. And it's not even because I think Bitcoin is overvalued. I think Bitcoin is slightly undervalued, and I think the price of Bitcoin right now is great. I think Bitcoin is fairly valued at approximately $5,000. But because we went up all the way to 20 for no reason at all, anytime you overshoot, you generally undershoot. And the challenge is going to be finding that bottom in price. I'm loving the technological improvements under the hood of Bitcoin. I think it's never been stronger. Are they investing in Bitcoin for speculation, or are they investing in Bitcoin because they actually believe in Bitcoin as the future of value transfer? And if it's the latter, then any time is a good time to start putting some money into Bitcoin at these prices below 5,000. If you actually want to time the market or think you have the ability to time the market, I think there is time to wait. So it depends on why you're getting in and what you're doing. But I do think that there's going to be more pain. I think that the market is very illiquid. And I think once again, our exchanges are potentially doing shady things, and people can profit by dumping the price of Bitcoin and picking it up on the cheap. I said a while ago when the price of Bitcoin was high, if you have a few $100 million looking to go into Bitcoin, spend like $50 million now, buy a bunch of Bitcoin, use most of it to dump on the exchanges and crash the price, use the rest of the money to buy up on the cheap. And people need to realize that people with bigger money can move the table. And just like a poker player with a bigger chip stack can push people around. And the same thing happens here. I do think prices will bottom sometime in 2019 and will start a new uptrend, because I think the fundamentals of Bitcoin are just too strong. I can't say this about any other coin besides Bitcoin, but I'm very confident in saying that about Bitcoin.
And like, how much of your trading work is like fundamental? How much is technical? And then how much of it just comes down to kind of gut instinct?
Like back in the day, I had gut instinct. Lately, I'm trying to take gut instinct out of it. My fundamental work has been done. It was completed years ago. People seem to confuse fundamentals with news events. I'm done with my fundamental work. Bitcoin is investment grade and everything else isn't. Now that you've identified which assets are tradable for the intermediate and long term and which aren't, at this point, you focus on the technicals. Trying to time the price of Bitcoin based on code changes of Bitcoin is probably not a good idea unless you have internal knowledge of them. And like we saw with SegWit, crazy things can happen. I just know that at this point, I'm not interested in investing in any altcoins because fundamentally they fail. Bitcoin passes fundamentally, so the only way to time it at this point is to either dollar cost average for the long term or use technicals to try and pick a reasonable time to buy and a reasonable time to sell.
Do you think most people really shouldn't be trading though? I remember like my very first podcast I interviewed, do you know Lou Martin, Venture Coinist?
I know of him from Twitter, yeah. But I believe he's coming to play poker as well.
He is coming. He's a great guy. Like, so he said in my very first interview, most people should not be trading this stuff. They want to because they want to make money, but most people shouldn't. It's too hard. Most people should just buy and sit on it and hold it for a number of years. How do you feel about that?
He's correct. I mean, trading for a living is no different than playing poker for a living. Those that take the time, learn, continue to study, continue to grow, learn patience, understand statistics, did a lot of work, a lot of homework, and most importantly, survived the early days of the career, can continue to have success until they get bored or find something they would rather do or find something more lucrative and more profitable. But when a person says, hey, I want to be a trader, I'm like, well, do you want to be a professional poker player? And a lot of people are, but the majority aren't. But a lot of people tried, and most people realized that it's really not for them. And eventually, same thing here. We're seeing it disproportionately. We're looking at it in the crypto space that dropped the barrier to entry to becoming a trader. You no longer needed a certain amount of money. You no longer needed to fill out any paperwork, and you no longer needed any kind of a geographical restriction, and you no longer had an age restriction. So this huge influx of new traders showed up, and eventually it will go away. In some of my presentations, I equated to the large amount of new traders that came on the scene in the late 1990s with the dot-com bubble. And one of the main reasons why so many new traders came on the scene in the dot-com bubble was because of dot-com brokers. Because you can now be a trader from the comfort of your own home with very minimal requirements. You still needed to have a bank account. You still needed to be of 18 years old. You still needed to have, you know, X amount of money unless you wanted to trade penny stocks. I remember I was, I'm going to age myself here. I was still in my university when I was like in the late 90s, when I was like 19 years old. And one of my dorm mates borrowed $1,000 from his brother and was trading penny stocks from the dorm. If we were in college 3 or 4 years later, this would not have been happening. But he had access because of the internet, because of E-Trade and Ameritrade, and because he was 18, and because he borrowed $1,000. He was able to do it. The same barriers that would have prevented him from trading in 1995, those barriers were gone, and he was able to trade in 1998. Now, that generation went through the housing bubble, went through the dot-com bubble, and like it kind of leveled itself out where most people were no longer traders. And now we just have a new influx of people. And when the majority of this crypto trading influx of people loses their shirts, we're going to go back to what it was before.
See, I missed the end because I'm trying to do the math. So I'm putting you at near 50.
Oh, God, no. Drop 10.
Oh, you're 40. Hold on. The late 90s, you were 19. Ah, the late 90s. Yeah, yeah. So you're 40.
Not yet. I'm still in my 30s.
You're younger than me, man.
Oh, you look better than me. Look at the hair difference.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. Recently, Tone, you've become a sex symbol with this new look.
Oh, the look's great. Let's find out how far it takes me in Vegas.
Well, listen, we'll grab a drink there. Okay, so listen, look, last couple of questions. I've got three things to ask you left. So firstly, still on the trading, like if someone's listened to this and they want to become a trader and they've decided they're going to do it, like what are the key skills they need to master? What are the things they need to focus their attention on?
They need to, I'm a big on technical analysis. You have to learn it. If you're going to be a trader, take technical analysis seriously. I believe that it helps. Other than that, you got to do your research on fundamental analysis to invest in things. The other thing is, somebody wants to be a trader, what are you going to trade? There are lots of things you can trade. You can trade currencies, you can trade stocks, you can trade futures, commodities, you can trade the crypto space. There's lots of things you can trade, and there's lots of time frames you can trade. Some people are longer term traders. Some people like to be day traders. There's all these variations between assets and trading styles. The number of combinations is almost infinite. I advise people to find something that works for them. If you can survive your first couple of years of trading, find something that works, find something you're comfortable with, and stick with that. And learn. There's two analogies that I make to becoming a professional trader, either poker players or race car drivers. Again, you're not just going to go out, and if you just go out into a track, you're probably going to die. You have to learn from people that have succeeded before you, and actual success, not a bunch of people doing videos, right? Sure, I do videos and I try to tell people what I think about the price of Bitcoin, that I travel the world and I teach the basics of technical analysis. But from there, you're on your own. What I teach people is only the first 5%. You got to put in the other work. Like if people only saw how much work I put in to my first trading strategies back in the early to mid 2000s, when me and my college roommate went and learned how to trade, took the same courses that I'm teaching to people. We learned options. We spent an entire year just like coming up with, we took one of the 100 things we learned. I recognized it and I'm like, hey, I think we should focus on this because it gives us the best odds. This one particular strategy in the option space during a specific time in the market. And then I spent months just on that one little strategy, perfecting it so that we had an advantage against everybody else in the world trading this one niche. We learned that one niche so well that, when I got my finance job and I got busy, he stopped as well, but we're back, or he's mostly back, I'm busy again. Like, all the work that we did in the early 2000s is still applicable today, and he's back to trading it today and is being profitable today. So you have to put in the work. It's if you think there's easy money in this world, you're going to find out that you're wrong. And the illusion of easy money is even worse. If you found something that's making easy money and you don't adjust and you don't understand why it's easy money, you're going to learn real quick how all of that reverses, as we're watching right now with Bitmain and the easy money that they made in dominating mining for a few years, and they're about to just go bankrupt.
Yeah, I think you might be right on that. Okay, the second question is, could be a big year for Bitcoin. Like, there's been a number of important kind of things happened over the last 2 years. And also, I've always felt like this bear market's been helpful. But 2019, what do you want to see happen for Bitcoin? Like, what do you think are the most important things coming up?
Oh, man, you're going to get me in trouble here.
No, go for it, man.
I think price is important. I think the bear market needs to end in 2019. I think it's going to be very, very painful and could set, you know, the adoption of Bitcoin back a lot longer if the bear market continues into 2020. So I really want to see the bear market end in 20. We don't have to go up fast. We can go up slow, but we have to stop going down. So I think the biggest thing that we need in 2019 is for price to finally make a low. And I don't know where that low is going to be. Really need that low to stay above 1,000. I think a Bitcoin price below 1,000 puts everything in danger. I know people say price doesn't matter, but that's bullshit. Price matters. Price matters a lot. Even the developers that are coding Bitcoin, it matters to them too, because a lot of them are early Bitcoin adopters. A lot of them have their wealth in Bitcoin, and a lot of them are programming Bitcoin because they want it to be the future of value transfer. And if the value of one Bitcoin goes back to $10, then a lot of them are probably going to stop, because what are they programming it for? So it would be considered a failure. So that's the most important thing.
That's not going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, it'll get me in trouble with some of the developers that say price doesn't matter, but who are friends of mine. But everything that I see happening with Bitcoin's code, with Bitcoin's development, with Bitcoin upgrades, I am happier than I expected. I think Lightning is scaling very well. I think the privacy features coming in are really, really well. Everything is going great. And the other thing that's missing, I think, from Bitcoin to actually taking over, we gotta lose the dead weight. We gotta lose a lot of this garbage. I mean, maybe a few of the top 10 altcoins will still hang around going into 2020, but the majority has to go away. Until I see Bitcoin going up in price and altcoins not going up in price, I'm not going to declare the end to this bear market. I think one of the things that's holding us back is people's misunderstanding of a blockchain, people's misunderstanding of Bitcoin, people thinking that these altcoins are viable, things like Ripple are viable, even Ethereum is viable. I think the implosion of Ethereum is a huge boost to Bitcoin, because then people will get back to the fundamentals of Bitcoin, understand what it is, and not dilute themselves by putting money into something that's actually going to lose it to zero. So I am looking forward to those three things. the underlying technology of Bitcoin is progressing great. I would like to see the end of the bear market, and the more altcoins start to disappear, the better it'll be. That's another thing I'm looking forward to.
Awesome. I've asked a few people about what they want to see for this year, and nobody's really talked about the bear market like that. So I think that's a cool thing. Okay, finally, to finish off, Tone, like I said, I'm really looking forward to the conference. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. But go on, give a shout out to the conference. Tell people why they should care, why they should attend, how they can get a ticket, and also how people can stay in touch with you and who you want to hear from.
Sure. Well, people can follow me on Twitter as Tone Vase, and also the Tone Vase YouTube channel, where I do pretty much at least daily videos, sometimes multiple times a day, keeping people up to date on the news surrounding the crypto space, the price of Bitcoin. Sometimes we do a law show. I have a bunch of lawyers that show up, which is important because you do want to know if you're breaking the law or not, which hopefully the ICO people are watching. And the conference is called Unconfiscatable. You can find it on unconfiscatable.com. The reason why it's called Unconfiscatable is because that is the property of Bitcoin that I value the most. That is my most valued property of Bitcoin, Unconfiscatable. I was so happy to get the domain. The other two properties of Bitcoin that are crucial is the fact that it's uncensorable, censorship-resistant value transfer, and the fact that it is unprintable. Its monetary policy was pretty much set in stone when Satoshi created it. And my presentation revolves around these three properties to try and explain how Bitcoin is competing with the US dollar, the euro, gold, and everything else. So for those that really want to learn about Bitcoin and why it's so important to the world, this is definitely the conference you want to be at. We're additionally joined by other financial experts with 20, 30 years of trading experience that talk about markets and economics. We do have a few very credible lawyers that will help understand it from a legal perspective. We have some developers and awesome personalities like Max Kaiser and Saif Adin, again, a PhD professor of economics, wrote one of my favorite books in the crypto space. So it's really a great collection of people that understand Bitcoin and can explain to you what a blockchain is. I wouldn't want my definition of a blockchain from somebody that is not attending this conference.
All right, man. Well, listen, look, I really can't wait. I mean, I love Vegas anyway. I'm looking forward to meeting you. There's a few other people I've not met that I'm looking forward to, and also getting a chance to meet some people I've had on the podcast but I haven't actually met. And also, I know, I've seen a kind of like little influx of people I know, like Luke and Junior Lancaster, who've said they're coming now. So I think it's going to be great. It's been great to have you on the podcast. This was an awesome episode. It's going to go out next Friday. If there's anything I can do to help promote the event, just let me know. And yeah, I hopefully will do this again in a few months.
Hey, the greatest promotion you did for me was the fact that you're coming and playing at the tournament and going to take some interviews with people. That's more than I can ask for.
All right, man. Well, listen, thanks for this, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Okay, so what did you make of that? Are you a fan of Tone's? Do you follow Tone? Do you watch his YouTube videos? Are you heading to his conference? Look, he gets a lot of stick, but Tone has skin in the game. He puts himself out there, which isn't an easy thing as a trader. You're always going to be judged on your calls. Personally, I respect him. I respect him as a trader for wanting to stay away from altcoins and tokens. He only trades in what he believes is a solid, long-term viable investment, which in crypto land right now is only Bitcoin. Definitely check out Tone's conference. He's pulled together a solid speaker list. If you're thinking of going, definitely check it out. Maybe come and join the poker tournament. I'm going to be in it, so it should be a lot of fun. I think we're going to see a trend of these crypto conferences starting to die out, hopefully, and probably hopefully going to see a load more Bitcoin-specific conferences. We start to see a few more over the last year. So big props to Tone for putting this on, for going through all the difficulties of putting on a conference. I can't imagine how difficult it is to do. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed listening to Tone. If you've got any questions about the show, feel free to reach out to me. I got a couple of updates. I'm heading out to Vegas and San Fran next week. So after Tone's conference, I'll be in San Fran. If you want to hang out, give me a shout. Also, my side gig course is launching on February the 3rd. Over 4 weekends, I'm going to live build an online business. Everything from concept to branding to setting up your email and your website. So if you want to set up a side gig, you can follow along step by step. Registrations are open for the first webinar. Spaces are limited. But if you head over to my website, www.whatbitcoindid.com/side-gig, you can register for that first webinar. Okay, listen, thank you. thank you so much to everyone who supports the show. I'm getting so much support right now. It's absolutely amazing. Loads of people are reaching out to me, and I pretty much reply to anyone. So thank you so much for your support. I love it. But if you do want to support the show, here are the things you can do. Firstly, just listen to the ads. That's the most important thing you can do. Don't skip the ads. These people pay to reach you. If the ads don't work, I'm not going to get advertisers. So just give it a couple of minutes. Listen to the advertisers. Check out what they've got to say. Also, if you don't want to listen to the ads, you can think about becoming a Patreon supporter. If you head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid, I'm approaching 70 now, which is so cool. If you pay $5 a month, you can get the show early and without ads. If you don't want to use Patreon, but you want to subscribe, I've had a few people pay by crypto. Email me, I'll send you the address. It's $60 for the year. I'll put you on the distribution list. There's also a crypto tip jar. Again, I didn't really want to do this, but somebody reached out to me, said they wanted to leave a tip, so I've put it up there. I got like $300 last month, so that's super cool. So if you want to leave a tip, head over there. You can become a show sponsor. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. I'm averaging over 100,000 downloads a month, which is super cool. You can leave me a review on iTunes or you can subscribe. Both of those help with the rankings. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Medium, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm at whatbitcoindid on everything. My personal Twitter is at Peter McCormack. DMs are open, reach out to me, it'd be great to hear from you. You can check out my website, which is www.whatbitcoindid.com. I'm currently rewriting my intro to crypto course. I'm making it Bitcoin specific, but I will talk about crypto in there, but kind of with warnings. You can sign up to my newsletter. I'm not doing a lot with that at the moment, but you will get an email each time there's a new show, and you can share this show out with your friends and family. So, got a couple of great interviews coming up next week. On Tuesday, I've got an interview with Brian Eisenbeck and Scott Lewis, a couple of Ethereum builders. This was in response to my show with Tua Demista, where we did the bearish case for Ethereum. I put it out to the Ethereum community. If anyone wanted to come on, they wanted to offer some counter arguments about Ethereum. Brian and Scott said yes, so we recorded this. It's a great interview. That'll be out on Tuesday. And on Friday, I've got an absolutely fascinating interview and possibly quite a controversial one with Andrew Torba, the CEO of Gab.com. I've already had mixed feedback on that. Some people are really happy I've done it. Some people aren't. We talk about censorship and why Bitcoin is free speech money. Definitely a show you don't want to miss. Okay, I've said enough. I hope you have a great weekend. If you want to reach out to me, feel free to email me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com, and I look forward to hearing from you.